Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland, made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
I'm HRN Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're focusing on water. You'll hear some disturbing news from an NYC investigative reporter.
Here lies the problem, how much we don't know about water tanks.
Katie Kiefer reports on water woes in the heartland.
Their water is heavily polluted with nitrates, which are coming from agricultural chemical applications on fields and running off into their water table.
And we'll check in with Dave Arnold, who's about to open a new bar that will serve some pretty fancy H2O.
It is hardcore.
So pour up a tall glass of ice water and be refreshed by this week's episode of Meat in 3, available on heritageradionetwork.org, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Elena Santigade. Now, there are certain cheeses that you find out about pretty quickly and you never forget. I'm talking about like the Michael Jordan, the Babe Ruth, the Muhammad Ali of cheeses. Parmigiano Reggiano, Stilton, Comté. This could be a whole episode in and of itself, by the way. Stay tuned, some future date. Other cheeses are almost there and then sometimes aren't quite as well known. No less groundbreaking, but not as much star power for whatever reasons. My guest today is on a continued quest to make sure one such cheese doesn't fall off the radar, Swiss Emmentaler. I'm excited to have Joe Salonia of Gormino back in the studio today. Welcome, Joe.
Elena, thank you for having me.
Okay, before we get into too much chatting, I'm super excited for what's about to happen. Listeners, we're doing something today that I realized we should be doing way more often at the start of the show. We are going to taste some cheese. So, Joe, what are we looking at?
Nice.
That was a great touch.
Thanks for the introduction. So we have here a flight of three Emmentalers from our range. We go deeper than this, but these are the three that we focus here on in the United States.
Okay.
One of these three is usually going to be in the Goldilocks zone for most shops. And of course, one is perfect for cooking, usually for chefs. So what we usually start, we call it the base of the mountain here, is the mild category.
Okay.
This is a piece of 5 to 7 month Emmentaler.
Okay.
It's aged in our cellars in Lagnau and also in our army bunkers in Reichenbach. And this particular piece, now we're trying to get as much cheese from who happens to be part of our cooperative is Fritz Baumgartner.
Okay.
And he just recently was placed first, so he's arguably, at least for this year, until the next World Cheese Championship, he is the reigning World Cheese Champion of the Swiss rinded category.
Wow, so he is the champ, Fritz. And actually, I have to say, my nickname from my grandpa was Fritzy. And I have to say, I don't really know why, but I really love the name Fritz, so I feel like this is the cheese for me. Here, this might be my Goldilocks cheese, who knows?
It has to be.
Okay, so here I'm looking at a piece. So again, this is a 5 to 7 month Emmentaler.
Yeah, this is probably right in the 6 to 7 month profile.
It's really bendy, like it's got a great sort of bendy texture to it as I'm playing around with it.
That's typical for a young Emmentaler, and that is actually one of the attributes that we'll be judged for, and it's also one of the attributes why some people aren't crazy about Emmentaler, is that it's, you know, the texture is a little flabby in a way. But this, if you notice, there's a balance, though.
Right. Yeah, because there's definitely structure here. I mean, it's bendy, but it's like, it's edging into that fudgy territory as I'm tasting it. And for me also, you know, listeners, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is because I think even though Emmentaler is a cheese that I think many people know by name and by sight, there's an iconic element happening here. Anyone want to guess? Okay, it's just me and Joe in the studio. So, Joe, tell us.
Of course, it's the holes or the eyes.
Yep.
So, but Emmentaler is the original cheese with holes.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'd am trying. Why we're able to have good work being done in cheese shops and conversations is that there are a lot of iterations now of cheese with holes.
Right.
We argue that this is the original.
This is like these holes, these eyes in the cheese, these holes in the cheese. Perfect. They're like, I can't draw a circle that perfect. And I don't know how to do that.
That's part of the indication of the health of the cheese is to see, look at the holes will be judged both from the eye and also tapping of the wheels.
To sort
our affineurs and our cellars and our caves, they'll tap the wheels and it's a different kind of noise they're listening to in regards to the holes.
Yeah, and this is like a perfect example of, I always say to people, you know, you really do use your all five senses when you're tasting cheese, but a lot of people don't get to use the sense of hearing, except affineurs really do. And Emmentaler is probably one of the cheeses that you're most paying attention to what it sounds like, how much air is in there, what are those eyes looking like?
Imagine a carpenter when they're testing, they're finding the studs in the wall, you know, the old school carpenters will use their hand and find, if it's a sheetrock house, they're going to tap with their hand. And it's a similar thing being done with the Emmental wheels. When the affineur, when our team is tapping the wheels, they're listening for a problem, really. So when there's a knot, so to speak,
it'll change tone.
It'll change, and that's not good.
Interesting.
We want there to be many holes. I guess they're feeling like the resonance within. They have such an acute sense of feel and touch and hearing more. You know, when you visit for a day, it's nothing. They're there every day tapping wheels.
Right. They have a whole different depth of development in that skill.
And that selection process is where our skills lie. Hmm. It's not so simple to say, oh, we're doing all these magical things with washings, and yes, the environment's special, and yes, we're hand washing, by the way, these wheels
intense
in Langnau, which is...
That's crazy. They're big.
They're big, and yeah, there are some hydraulics to help lift them and flip them, but the washing is done by hand. But the selection process is where the skill is, and it's the selection process that will determine what can be aged farther out to 12 and 24 months. And then... besides our own team, there's a third party, the branch organization, which will come in and certify whether or not any of these cheeses can be allowed to carry the Emmentaler label.
Whether or not they agree, basically, is like...
Yeah, and without their stamp of approval, which happens, there's three inspections, one in the dairy and then two in our cellars.
I see.
And if anything falls short, it's going to have to be relegated to something like fondue or local sales without the Emmentaler label on it.
Now, okay, listeners, I don't know if you can tell, but I've been eating cheese while Joe's talking. Which hopefully you can't tell because that might be gross audibly. But this 5 to 7 month is like, to me, I think I was expecting something with a little bit more of an edge to it. You know, the softness of the flavor on this is really striking me. Like, I expect a younger cheese to be milder, but this is really in that sort of like sweet spot of Swissiness. You know, I mean, the original Swissy flavor is the Emmentaler flavor. Am I right? That's it?
That's why the cheese is selling well in all over the world. This is the cheese you eat when you're hungry, though, right? Like, we're not going to pretend that when we eat young Emmentaler, our eyes are going to roll into the back of our head and say,
this
what
is
was
like,
it?
This is like your air-popped popcorn that's, you know what, it's good.
Yeah.
But...
it's darn good cheese, but here's the thing. When you understand it, you're proud to also represent it. It's cheese with integrity. It's made in a village dairy. Mm-hmm. It's made by hand. It's made by people we can tell you their name.
Right.
It's aged. A lot of skill, a lot of steps.
Right. And even at this age, texturally, like, I was also expecting, like, is there going to be a tiny bit of grittiness? Like, how smooth is that texture going to be at 5 to 7 months? And it's really pretty smooth. I mean, I wouldn't call it melty, but it's not like piecing out as I'm tasting it. You know, does that make sense?
And there's a balance to it, right? Mm-hmm. The other iterations of cheese with holes, any type of Swiss cheese, if you taste them next to Emmentaler, especially when you go mild cheese against mild cheese and then you have a real Emmentaler there, you're going to pick up on what's being compensated for it being pasteurized. Usually there's some other cultures added.
Right.
And there's like this fake sweetness that's out of balance.
Sometimes
because
there's also like a bilious note.
Oh, that little pukey note you mean?
Yeah, little baby puke. Uh-huh. And I'm not getting that at all.
Well, I certainly hope not.
No, not even. I mean, sometimes it's like, okay, if there's a tiny hint of it and you're cooking with the cheese, it's going to maybe result in a strong, like, nice flavor. But I'm not even getting a whisper. So that's really good.
Again, balance. You know, there are, like in the wine industry, you know that there are some inexpensive wines that are marketed really well on price, and they're very jammy and jelly and sweet, cherry-like.
Right.
And then there are the more well-balanced wines, and you got to pay a little more for those. And but as your palate develops, you appreciate it more.
Yeah, and with this, so like it's sort of like, here's my roundup on the tasting of the 5 to 7 month that we've just done. I'm getting like milky hint of sweetness, but not super sweet. I mean, this is a savory, Swissy, like iconically Swissy cheese, and it's sort of purely likable. Like I would eat this, like, you know, cubed up and in front of the TV. Like, give me the snack.
I eat this
man.
When I'm hungry. I eat this on the road. Like if I got done exercising and I need to put food in my belly, I will have an apple, maybe some beef jerky, and I'll eat a giant chunk of Emmental, and that's that could be dinner.
Totally.
You know, I can't say that about a poisson. I mean, I could, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
with,
that's
with
tricky.
A cheese like a poisson. This is the cheese you eat when you are sometimes simply hungry. Yeah. And it's great for
you
sandwiches.
You just want sustenance.
It's utilitarian. Mm-hmm. It's good, darn good food. And it's important for, I think, a cheese shop to have some cut of it one way or the other.
It's true. It's also, I would say, you know, there's a reason kids kind of gravitate toward Swissy cheese. Like this to me is like a great cheese for kids to just love and eat, and probably is at a price point that's like not going to make you faint when your child eats half a pound of, you know, the artisanal cheese you bought at the cheese shop, which might be shocking to some. Yeah, I really like the idea also of like a utilitarian aspect to some cheeses that still exists within an artisanal cheesemaking tradition. You know, like, it doesn't all have to be so precious, which I think about sometimes. Kind of reminds me of my bicycle. Like, I just use it to get around. And it's not fancy.
The bicycle has history, though, right?
Yeah, it's got major history. I love my bicycle. But it's like, you know, I don't need to be precious about it. It could get scuffed up. It's going to do what works, does what I need it to do. It's, like, well-made.
These are things with a lot of integrity, and then you can go ahead and talk about the history if you want to get into, like, as far as this, you know, the salesmanship of it, if you are at a counter. But it's not hard to just embrace knowing that it was made by hand with milk delivered twice a day.
Right. You could tell.
You know,
even in
raw
the five
milk.
I was also wondering, like, am I going to be able to tell, you know, how delicately this cheese is made at this age? And you could totally tell. It's like, this is like a high class approachable cheese. If that's not too much of an oxymoron,
I dig that. No, I mean it's translated by so many people in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's related in many different ways, and it's also been confused, which is also like the challenge of what I'm trying to unravel when I have, you know, group meetings with buyers or conversations with industry folks. Just unraveling the confusion of even the semantics of the word and so even this next one you're tasting is rum is rum taller, so even that's just slightly confusing. Like, well, what is that?
Yes, listeners, I jumped ahead. There's cheese in front of me. I'm gonna try it.
So
I'm tasting number 2 out of 3.
Yeah,
rum taller. How do we spell that?
R-A-H-M. So rum loosely translates to cream. So this is an exception in the Emmental or AOP rules. It's where the fat, the full cream, is allowed to be left in the milk.
They don't skim it. They don't take anything out.
Exactly. And in some cases, the cheesemaker will slightly adjust to add some fat. But by the way, there's only 2 cheesemakers in the world. So you have...
There's only 2 cheesemakers making Rahmtaller at all.
That's it. You have 127 Emmental or AOP producers in the zone in the Emmental in Switzerland, right? Then out of the 127, 10... are part of the Gormino cooperative.
Right.
And out of the 10, 2 on only certain occasions, like maybe once a month, twice a month, will make Rahmtaler. When they make Rahmtaler, they'll maybe make 2 wheels each.
Wow.
It's just small production. It's an emerging category to help bridge the gap between mild and aged profile.
Yeah, so
with
a little how more interest. Old is this one that we're tasting?
The one we're tasting is about 13, 14 months. We listed as 12 to 15.
Now, I'm also getting, you know, it's like got some of the bendiness of the young one, but it definitely breaks then much quicker. So you can tell immediately, like, it's lower in moisture. It's still got these great eyes to it, but it has sort of a denser, more packed paste, I would say.
A little more on the fudgy side, would you say, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's almost a little sticky to chew, which I like. It's like really, like, it makes me want to keep tasting it. And this one, you know, it's really fun because I do immediately, notice the cream content. You know, like, it's definitely one of those mouth-coating experiences. You know, like, there's definitely more fat happening here And that's pretty evident right away. And it's not like beat you over the head with flavor. I mean, still sort of in that zone of like a milky Swissy flavor profile. It's nothing like too outside of that, but it lingers. This is like continuing. Mm-hmm. Like I tasted it many moments ago and I'm still tasting it.
Yeah, there's a longer finish to it. You get some flowery notes. There's definitely more of a backbone, like just some more of those brown butter, nutty mm-hmm. little backbone.
Yeah, it's almost like you get the cooked sense with this mm-hmm. one a little bit more, like warmed milk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get full on caramelized with this one, but I do get that like warm, just heating milk on the stovetop, like really, really nice milk or cream.
And this averages about 10%. You know, this will be about 55% fat and dry matter, where the Emmentaler is typically around 45.
Oh, okay.
Give or take a couple points.
Okay, let's jump to the third guy before the break.
Sure.
Because then I can eat more cheese during the break.
So the third one is the one with the label that gets everybody's attention.
Dun, dun, dun.
That what we technically call the Gulthof label, but its nickname is the Slow Food Emmentaler label, mm-hmm. for short, because it is the one and only Emmentaler that's listed by the Presidio. And one of the reasons that it's listed by them is that it uses just self-produced cultures by the dairy.
Which I love. And I was just saying to Joe before the show, listeners, that I think I feel like I'm starting to taste the commercial cultures in different cheeses. Like I'm really starting to identify those flavors a little more than I want to. So I'm on this quest to like find as many cheeses where there's proprietary cultures where they're culturing with the way of their own cheese making from the day before, which I think is what's happening with the slow food Emmentaler?
Yes, exactly that. So the part of the whey is held back, and it's almost like a little bit of like almost like a yogurt process mm-hmm. until the next day.
Right.
But that's a step that was dormant for almost 20 years before it was brought back.
Ah.
So it was a step that had to be retaught by Bernard Meyer's father, who was, even during his career, had to abandon the step. For continuity, the branch at that time wanted everybody to use the lab-produced cultures. So the project was to reinstitute this, back to the old-fashioned way, the traditional way.
Mm-hmm.
But that had to be retaught and relearned, and thank goodness, otherwise it would have been lost for who knows how long or forever.
I mean, it's almost like it was resuscitated. It was lost.
But this is the original, this is the most traditional recipe of Emmentaler right here. Thank goodness it's here.
Yeah, and again, I'm getting, it's a much firmer, drier paste for sure. You have so much more time on it. How old is this one?
This one's close to 24 months.
24 months.
It's more of a broader banded. There's like a little more. There's more notes being played.
Yeah,
there's
way more nuance going on, but it's still really subtle. And I think that's a note I want to talk about when we come back from a short break. Because as a retailer, I think you're going to totally miss this if the cheese is cold. So maybe we can talk a little bit about how best to taste it. And geez, the flavors are like still going again, mm-hmm. but on a much broader spectrum. And the cool thing is that at the core, you're still getting that Swissy note. You're still not getting into any of that sort of bitter or kind of like intensely prickly flavor. Like that's not there at all. It's really that sort of nutty, milky creaminess is still there, which I'm really loving.
Hopefully some balance.
Yeah, totally.
That's the idea.
Okay, cool. I'm going to taste more as we go to a short break here, and then we'll be back to talk about how you listeners can save the Emmentaler. And if you haven't yet pressed pause on your podcast, pause it, go out, buy some Emmentaler, and then you too can taste these cheeses while we talk in the second half of the show. Okay, we'll be right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of the Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kaltbach Cave Age cheeses, Der Scharfer Max, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
All right, welcome back to Cutting the Curd. We're broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with Joe Salonia of Gormino, and we have been tasting Emmentaler, three different age profiles. I'm like totally wowed, and also I'm really loving, I mean, I always love to do a vertical tasting of anything. It just, to me, it dials you in so much on like what's at the heart of the thing you're tasting. So listeners, it's really fun to taste multiple age profiles if you can get your hands on them. And throwing the Romtaler in there too has been really fun. So now I want to talk about something else happening in the studio, which is Joe's t-shirt, which is pretty cool. It says Save the Emmentaler on it. It's a diagram of how to cut the Emmentaler, which I think is brilliant. What's going on? What's with the t-shirt? And also, everybody's wondering how they can be a superhero here in real life and save this cheese.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. The shirt was designed by New York cheesemonger Josh Santamaria. It's an idea that had, but he really brought it to life.
And Josh is the buyer at Foragers.
He is. Mm-hmm. And he's also a serious contender, I think, in the CMI.
Oh, yeah. He's a big CMI.
He's seeded. Competitor. He's one of the top seeds, I think.
Now, I'm a judge this year, so I can't get too biased here. But
the shirt is, we'll call it an infogram, right? So it's actually got some useful information, the underpinning reasons of what makes Emmentaler AOP the cheese. And then if you wanted to just look at the wedge, you could kind of make sense on how would be the traditional way to break down the wheel and cut it.
Right, because... Okay, so there is a campaign. This t-shirt is part of a campaign, and let's get to that in a minute. But since we're talking about how to cut this cheese, let's talk about the fact that this is a, 200-pound, 220-pound wheel of cheese, anywhere in that range,
right? Yeah, it
could
be up to 220 pounds pretty easily, sometimes a little more, yeah. Anywhere from 180 to 225 is not out of the norm.
So we're trying, you know, you're doing this campaign that you've done... Have you done it yearly, or you've done it every few years, a couple times here?
It got some legs in early 2015.
15, yeah. And I think that's when you were first on the show with Greg.
Exactly, yeah. I was on the show with Greg, I think, in June of 2015. So it's been 3 years.
Yeah.
And and that was a watershed moment for me to be on the show with Greg. Well, what we know is the reality is that most shops can't handle a whole wheel, right?
Right.
So the way I try to explain it is just like if we are at the honey beehive, or if we are at the winery or the orchard, everything always tastes the best when you're at the winery, at the brewery.
It never tastes quite the same again.
It's just the best, right? So if we're at the best piece of Emmental we're going to have, honestly, is going to be at the dairy eating a piece of Emmental, right? So that's
true.
The best.
Yeah.
What's the second best?
Right.
Second best would be if we can get a whole wheel cut. Shipped here and cut. That would be
cut
second
fresh.
Best.
A fresh piece.
Fresh piece.
Okay.
So that's not always a realistic option for many shops.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume very few could really handle it. I mean, even a wheel of parm for most shops can be kind of a heavy lift. And that's 90 pound, basically.
So what we're doing now is we're making our cheese available in what we call 12ths. So they're really 16 pound wedges.
Hmm.
They're either available fresh cut that way from certain distributors that prefer to cut them for us, or we'll go ahead and pre-order just... per order for distributors that work closely with their customers, and then we'll deliver them the 12 cuts.
Very cool.
And what the illustration is we'll help you break down either whether you want to call it an eighth or a 12th.
The wedge,
this
the
is
big
the way
wedge.
To get a fair cut with proper rind distribution
right.
on the wedge.
Yeah, this is a really helpful diagram. And to wear it would even, you know, if you're managing a cheese shop, you just wear the shirt.
Just wear the shirt.
You know, when people ask you, like, how am I supposed to cut this cheese? Say, hey, look at my shirt.
It's an attention grabber, too. It's just fun. You go to the gym, you wear the shirt. You walk around, and you go to Disney World with the shirt on if you have to.
Have you done that,
yes,
Joe?
I have. I totally have. So the point about the shirt, though, is now today we're actually launching a very limited time t-shirt campaign with DZTA, Daphne Zippo's Teaching Award.
Which we here on the show support a ton.
It's an amazing way to embrace the cheese industry through... knowledge, the fostering of knowledge,
right.
and education. So this cheese shirt is a teaching t-shirt that supports teaching and education.
So the proceeds of the shirt?
All profits go to DZTA.
Very cool.
So if you go on to Gormino's Instagram, or if you go on to DZTA's Instagram today, okay, through July 3rd, you have an opportunity to just hit the link in, mm-hmm, in the bio. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Takes you right to this website for the t-shirt. You will just go ahead and order your t-shirt, and when the campaign's over on July 3rd, mm-hmm, about 2 weeks later, the shirt will be at your doorstep.
Wow.
And you'll have it, if you are attending ACS, you'll have it in time for that too.
Very cool. But for all the summer festivities.
Yeah, you know, you'll have it for the beach, and you'll have it for the future.
Yeah.
And I also want to even encourage any cheese shop owners that are listening, like, it could be a great way to show your appreciation for the team, to just buy everybody on the team
get
a t-shirt.
Team set.
Yeah, get a team set, write it off on your taxes. But it's all for the best cause. You know, it's a good way to support traditional cheese knowledge, and of course, that's the embodiment of DZTA. And
right,
it just so happens that we are,
you're also,
you know, flying the flag for one of the most traditional cheeses here.
Right. And so, you know, just to sort of dial in on what exactly we're saving here. I mean, we've been talking about why the cheese is special and sort of that core flavor profile that, you know, does get sort of imitated and sometimes pretty well, which is fun. Like, it's, imitation is the best form of flattery. So I feel like when I have a good domestic Swiss cheese, I'm always like, this is good. You know, I'm glad they can do it, you know. And but it's like, it's the same as having an Alpine style cheese that's made here in the U.S. You still want to, you want to know that you could have Gruyere when you want it, you know, and you can have these classic versions of the cheese that almost heighten the experience of even tasting the newer American sort of innovator versions, because without the history, it's harder to even understand what the newer stuff is. What is it based on? How is it even setting itself apart? So in that sense, I'm really interested in the fact that I have some stats here, and it's like, you got to correct me if I'm wrong on some of this. But
I'll do my best.
There were 600 dairies making this cheese after World War II. And now we're down to 128. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
And then Gormino is only one of four or five companies exporting it from Switzerland.
There might be more, we're the only company that's operating vertically, meaning we're producing,
right,
and aging it in the Emmental,
which
it's a pretty big zone, but the big companies aren't doing the aging in the zone like we are.
Right, and that's also, I mean, one of the things I loved about the show that you did with Greg back in 2015 was you sort of summed it up as like, supporting Emmentaler is like about embracing the village cheesemaker. And I do think that when we think about, you know, economies of scale, and, you know, we aired the show I did with Andy Hatch last week.
Great show, by the way.
Thanks. And he had some amazing points about, you know, these mid-sized, sort of like family-sized cheesemaking operations and how to save those. And so it reminded me of, like, you know, your quote there of like, Emmentaler is embracing the village dairy, and the fact that Gormino is making aging in the Emmental seems like super unique. I mean, tell us a little bit about the Emmental and where is it? What is that area like? How big, like, what are we even talking about there? Is it?
It's one of the larger cheese producing zones in Switzerland, mm-hmm, but Switzerland's not a giant place. I mean, it's
certainly
still
not
a small,
very dense.
Yeah, it's not. It's the area that it is really centering around Bern, and then goes north and east into upper parts of the country. But it's in more of the lower, mm-hmm, parts of the country of Switzerland, although we have many mountain dairies that produce the Emmentaler within, right, our group. We also do produce, you know, as far as our dairies, we're composed of 12 dairies at the moment. It's 10, right, Emmentaler, 2 La Gruyère AOP dairies as,
right,
well.
Right.
And many of those dairies are what we call mountain dairies, which there's a lot of qualifying factors besides the height of the dairy. There's, mm-hmm, there's a minimum amount of flowers, grasses, and herbs.
Mm, yeah.
The steepness, which will also help more flowers grow.
Mm.
So getting back to your point about, you're talking about like where in the zone is,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, there's the Emmy River, right?
The so Emmy River the Emmy and Emmy Valley.
And then you have, yeah, the Emmy Valley.
That's where it was born. That's where the name,
right,
comes
and then
from.
Yeah, the Emmental is the region, and Emmentaler is the cheese.
Yes.
Is that, do I have that right?
Yes.
Like, the nomenclature is tricky.
And Swiss cheese is just now anything with holes, right?
Right, right.
Because I'll go into a store in anywhere USA and I'll see Bulgarian Swiss
right.
or Dutch baby Swiss and Polish Swiss and there's even Switzerland Swiss, right? That's even more. Now that's the real confusing one, because you know you have French Emmental,
right?
You have even PDO Emmental from Austria.
Mm-hmm.
You have stuff from Ohio and the Midwest. You have Emmental.
Right.
So you and I, if we want to open up a dairy in Pennsylvania, we can call it Emmental or Emmental.
Right.
That's not protected.
Right.
What's only controlled now is Switzerland Emmental, or as a you know, together, those
two, right, those two words,
those
together.
Two words together with the insignia, like it's very specific.
Mm.
So it's not a lot of control is what I'm getting at.
Right.
Right.
And that's where saving it and defining it becomes really important, just
like,
because it can be so many things at this point.
Let's just think of it saving it is like celebrating it.
Yeah,
like we don't want to victimize the cheese. It's
yeah.
more like we're just celebrating. And just by simply understanding the difference between what Emmentaler is and what
mm-hmm.
it is not
mm-hmm.
is you've done 80% of the work.
Very cool.
You know.
I really like that. So back to sort of that 200-pound behemoth of a wheel. What are your suggestions? I mean, we've got on the one hand, it's like for cheesemongers, ask your distributors, what have you got? Can you cut a piece fresh for me? Are you doing the wedges? I think that a simple question there would be interesting. And I think that if retailers are open to getting a fresh cut piece, that's definitely something to voice to your distributors, right?
Yeah, but as you know, these FSMA laws and are making it more constricting for distributors to even fresh cut. So we can't bank on fresh cut being a growing trend. We have to actually predict that it will be a
right.
shrinking trend.
Right.
So what we really want to make sure is that retailers don't overbuy.
Mm.
So my first caution is don't overbuy.
Right.
And the solution is, hey, you know, your distributor has 12s. See if they break a case. Get a 16-pound wedge. And it's like buying
That's no problem. That's
it's the size of most wheels.
And so then tell us, you know, give us some inspiration for what you think of as the best merchandising approach from a retailer's perspective.
So what you definitely want to do is you want to show off that encumbering piece, actually.
Oh, the eyes.
Yeah, you want to show... The most inconvenient thing about the cheese
yeah.
is its size, right?
Right.
But that's its most powerful marketing tool.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this lumbering giant piece of cheese. Like, what do you do with it? It's like, you put that in the corner of your cheese case and
right.
show it off. Don't chop it up into little pieces right away.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't care how busy you are. You want to... Then get two wedges. Make sure you're showing
right.
off...
And
this
based on what I'm looking at on your T-shirt, you can start to cut the cheese and still have a pretty big piece there.
100%. You a lot of times you'll cut it medially, so you'll have two like large wedges,
mm-hmm.
but little half in height, and you
right.
wrap one nicely, and then you start approaching one of the wedges almost like the way very familiar way to like cut Comté or Gruyère.
Yeah, very
you know,
cool.
You'll cut it from the nose back.
Hmm. And then
you want to have a sign that. It's
right.
bragging that this is the real
yeah, Emmentaler.
Brag.
You know, we got to brag about
brag
this.
Brag about it.
Brag about this cheese. And also, you know, even if you're thinking about, if you have the 5 to 7 month, it's like brag about how straightforward it is. Brag about how easy it is.
Yeah, well, we're not taking ourselves too seriously here. It's we know what it is. It's mild, good cheese, but
yeah.
hey, it's got integrity. We could tell you who made it. We
yeah,
can
that's
show
fun.
You their picture. We could... If you want to see the dairy farmers' pictures, we'll send you those. We can show you the milk jugs.
Maybe you could do like a calendar one year, you know.
Maybe
cheesemaker
that's not a bad
picks,
idea.
You know, just an idea.
Yeah.
Okay, final question. I think of this cheese as a fondue cheese. I think of it as a sandwich cheese. What are some other things people could do with it? Like a lot of our, you know, a lot of specialty shops definitely have a food service arm where they can kind of move cheeses through their own, you know, house menu items. And, you know, I think that it's always helpful to be able to suggest to people, like, here's what I do with this. Or even what's your favorite pairing with it? Like what wine, what beer, what are your favorite things?
I love sour anything with them. I love
mm.
the sour beers. I love the funky ciders.
Mm.
I'll go that route with it. I also will cook with it. Like it's actually pretty good on pizza, like a pizza type preparation.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, would bring like a tangy sort of like that like slightly sour tangy note would kind of lighten up a pizza almost in an interesting way.
Yeah, I love it in my omelet. It's just quiche. I mean, you know, that way. I love snacking with it and I just love pears with it.
Ooh.
If you get your hands on really good pears, to me, something about pears and Emmentaler are just a simple match made in heaven.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that also because it's not like a super acidic cheese. Like, it's not a super, it doesn't have that like immediate mouth-watering, sweet, nutty, you know, combination that you get with some Alpine style cheeses. So the pear is like a more subtle fruit. I always think of a pear as like a little bit more of an regal fruit in that way. Like, it's not over the head sweet. So it's really cool to think about pairing it with that.
And of course, burgers. You know, there's a couple of famous burger
classic
restaurants. One is in New Orleans. The name escapes me at the moment. There's a couple in the Mid-Atlantic region where they use the slow food Emmentaler on their burger.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slamming burger. I mean, it's not a $4.95 burger.
Yeah.
But it's, hey, if you're going to charge what they charge for the burger, let's put a good cheese on there.
Wow, yeah. Totally. Okay, we got to go eat now.
Sounds good. Let's see if they'll put some on their pizza outside.
Yeah,
let's bring in the rest.
You're planting a good seed here at Roberta's. Well, Joe, thank you for joining me on the show today. And thanks for the excellent cheese snacks.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome. So one more time for our listeners, how can people plug into the Save the Emmentaler campaign?
The best way right now is to go on to Gormino's Instagram or DZTA's Instagram and buy a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is contemplate whether or not you already have some Emmentaler in your case or you're cooking with it if you're a chef listening, and just understand the underpinning facts about the cheese, which are actually displayed on the shirt.
So super straightforward. Mongers, chefs, ask your distributors about options. If you don't currently carry the cheese, distributors, if any of you are listening, ask Joe if you don't currently carry the cheese. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Elena Santigade, and we'll be back next week with more cheesy radio goodness here on Cutting the Curd. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. I prayed each night for someone exactly like you. Now why should we